Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Lift off! Hello!
Hey. Hello, hey girl, hey, how are you?
I'm good. I just want to apologise in advance to everybody that I have a cold, so if I sneeze, cough, or any of the above, no, I didn't. So apologies, but I've had this cold for a week, so I'm over it. I'm so over it. Get away. But other than that, I'm all good. How are you?
I'm well. This is Elle, by the way.
Oh yeah, this is Kath, the one that sounds like she's not got a nose.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm doing well this morning. It's a lovely Sunday afternoon. It's Sunday afternoon that we're recording. I've been on a run.
It is.
Because I'm running a half marathon, so I have to do that. But other than
this is her next thing, by the way, guys. Her next fitness challenge thing. We're all here for the ride, you know.
Oh my god. Yeah, maybe. Are we going to say the same thing? Maybe I give you updates.
No, I was going to say maybe one day you could convince me to do it. But then I thought, probably not, actually. So.
Yeah, well, I said that to my friend. And 2 years later, here we are. So maybe one day I can convince you to do it.
Maybe.
I need to give people updates, though, because I'm actually interested in how the next sort of like 3 months are going to unfold, because I'm also doing like 2 high boxes. So it's like a really, I don't know, we might have said this in our episode back at the beginning of Jan, but I've got 3 sort of like intense weeks, because I've got 3 competitions or 3 races like back to back, which is which is a lot. Well, to be fair, there's like maybe a little over 10 days between the High Rocks and the Hackney Half, but I have 2 High Rocks within a week of each other, and then 10 days and then the Hackney Half. So I want to document it in some way. I just haven't found a way to document. I haven't thought about how I want to do it, because I'm dubious about putting my life on. We put our life online every week anyway. Listening to this episode. Mm-hmm. But and it's like one thing to be on Instagram, although reach is just terrible on there, and it's another thing to put stuff on TikTok, which I can't believe I'm sort of like freaking out about that. TikTok. So yeah,
we're getting better at TikTok.
We are.
Guys, follow us on TikTok. Encourage us. We're millennials. We can't be held responsible for our TikTok habits. it doesn't come naturally to us in the same way. Okay.
Yeah, I'm very much, to be honest, I'm a voyeur on TikTok. I like to watch people's TikToks. I don't actually like to make them, but are there at We Are Bookish Pod. So please go send us a like, send us a follow. We'd be very grateful.
Give us some love. But yeah, bet. All good. We'll get there. We're getting better. We're good. But yeah, we've got a special episode for you today. Lucky you guys. This episode is brought to you by the Tandem Collective and Octopus Books. It's sponsored by them, so we're very grateful for that.
Thank you guys.
Yes, thank you very much. But we've also, it's a book that I've had on my TBR list for a really long time anyway, so when they reached out to us, we were like, oh my god, yes, what a great opportunity. And yeah, so thank you very much for supporting this episode. The episode that we're going to do today is on Strong Female Character by Fern Brady, which is a memoir biography type book written by the comedian Fern Brady. So you might have seen her on like Taskmaster or whatever. Actually, when I was reading this book when I went away with my brother, And he picked it up and started reading it. And I was like, this is really weird. Why is he reading my book? And then I was like, oh, you can borrow it after me if you want. And he was like, yeah, I really like Fern Brady. I've seen her on Taskmaster. I was like, oh, cool. I thought it didn't really feel like his kind of book. You know, it's called Strong Female Character. And he reads so, like, only fantasy novels.
Yeah, he's like high fantasy, the big epics, like, yeah. 1,000-page sprawling. Not that I've met him, it's just what Kath's told me.
Yeah, and he tries to get me to read them, which, to be fair, one day I should. He tries to get me to read Brandon Sanderson's books, guys, so for fantasy people, you know what I mean, but one day. But anyway, so you might know Fern Brady, but this is her memoir. You know, we quite like memoirs, celebrity memoirs. We've done a few episodes on them before. This one is pretty good. We both really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I
found it really insightful, personally.
Yes.
So I'm very glad to have read it. And I think everyone should. Because yeah. It's a perspective that you don't get. It's not in the narrative. It's not in the main narrative when you talk about autism. So, spoiler alert, it's about autism and other things. But yeah.
Yes.
It's not. So I'm so glad she shared her own experiences.
Yes. No, I agree. And it's like, it's a really interesting perspective and like really insightful and like really eye-opening. So definitely recommend. It's also won a lot of awards, guys. It won the Nero Book Awards, which was previously the Costa Book Awards, which I just called it that earlier because I was just like, it's like ingrained. But that I love that prize, the now Nero Book Awards. I think really great books win that. Like,
yeah, they do.
Do you remember Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine? Do you remember that book?
Yeah.
That won that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like I really like the books that win that prize. I think they're like commercial books. They're really good though. Usually anyway. But it's been shortlisted for loads of other things like Goodreads Choice of the Year, Amazon Nonfiction, Bookshop Org Indie Champions, Books also in My Bag.
Named Audible Books of the Year 2023, which is good because I did most of my I did my reading comprehension exercise like I did when I read a classic like a month ago. I was listening mostly because I listen on my commutes. But then I also, when I had the chance, I actually went out and bought the book. Also, guys, we have a giveaway. We'll get back to that. Yeah. We have a giveaway of this book. So if you would like to win a copy, we'll tell you how you can do that later. But yes. I went out and bought a copy so I could sit and I could tab it and make notes. And then when I did have an opportunity to sit and listen, I was doing both because I think it's a great comprehension exercise. But go listen
and
to
also
it on Audible.
Read by Fern Brady, who incidentally had a cold at the same time. So I just think I had a cold on purpose for the recording of this episode. funny. I didn't realise that because I didn't actually listen to it. Normally I listen to memoirs, yeah?
Yeah.
I actually read this one. Don't really know why. I bought the paperback and everything. I took it away with me and I got really into it. But then Elle was like, oh, you know, because I was like, Elle, I have a really bad cold still. Like, I'm going to sound awful on this episode. She was like, don't worry. Fern Brady had a cold while she was recording the audiobook. I was like, great. It's meant to be. It's all good.
she talks about, I'm going to get this wrong now because I didn't tab that section. I don't think I clipped it. On Audible, but she's talking about like being a comedian and stand up and learning timing, and she speaks about how that's really helped her massively, but then she's like, it seems like it doesn't make a difference now because I've got a cold and you might not hear that I can do these things. So yeah.
Yeah, well, same.
it's available now in paperback. And then you can also, like, it's also available in other formats like ebooks and audiobook, as we've just spoken. And I actually did see a poster yesterday where it's like, read Fern Brady's book. And then they had a QR code and you could, like, download the audio sample.
Do you know what? I love it when I see posters of episodes that we've done. I don't know why. It just, like, makes me feel like I'm connected to the poster. But, like, I saw a poster for American Fiction as well, and I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. But yeah, there's, we just want to do some content warnings ahead of the rest of the episode. Do you want me to read them?
I can read them. You can read them. Either will.
You go.
Okay. Hi guys. Elle here. The memoir. So here's some content warnings. Here's some content warnings. Okay. The memoir does help in understanding meltdowns and the struggles of people with autism before and after diagnosis. While it could be educational for readers, the content and the tone it is written in could be challenging for some. This is a comedic tone used in some parts of the book that could be disarming for some readers, but could be perceived as flippancy by others. Similar tone was used for discussions about serious topics such as self-harm. We think that this is an exceptionally raw, honest discussion of Fern's own experience, and we're thrilled she's sharing it with us. We'd also encourage readers to ensure they're looking after themselves when reading sensitive content.
So, yeah. So basically, it's a good book, but just be aware of some of the themes that come up. And if they're triggering for you, then just make sure that you're looking after yourself. We'll just do a little summary of the book, and then we'll get into some of our thoughts and feelings. So Waterstones have the best descriptions. Sorry, who is their description writer? I want to know. So the book is exploring class, mental health, societal pressures, and individual ambition. Strong female characters, a candid and groundbreaking memoir of neurodiversity, sexism, and defying expectations. And I quite like her description on the back of the book. It's like a summary of my book. 1. I'm diagnosed with autism 20 years after telling a doctor I had it. 2. My terrible Catholic childhood. 3. My friendship with an elderly man who runs the corner shop and is definitely not trying to groom me. 4. Homelessness. 5. Stripping. 6. More stripping, but more nervous breakdowns. 7. I hate everybody at Edinburgh Uni, etc. 8. Redacted as too spicy. 9. After everyone tells me I don't look autistic, I try and cure my autism and get addicted to Xanax. 10. Redacted as too embarrassing. So I think that gives like quite a good flavour of the book. It's like, it's quite funny and cutting and witty, but also like quite not light themes. What's the opposite of not light? Heavy.
Heavy.
Thank you. Quite heavy themes.
What's the opposite of not light?
Heavy. Oh my God, I had a brain malfunction then. I was like, what is the word? I can't. But yes, so it's very funny. But I think in a way it's like quite jarring sometimes because it's really funny, but the theme is really like heavy at the same time. But then sometimes I think that makes it easier to digest. Like it's quite interesting, like how the humor is like threaded throughout, because obviously Fern Brady is a comedian, so it's quite funny because she's a funny gal. But
it sort of cuts the tension slightly. I found it really jarring in places, when especially when you're listening to it and you're not expecting her to say something. So she might talk about something and then just casually drop something about if it's related to mental health or self-harm, and then you're like, oh, wasn't expecting that. And then you're like, oh, and then you don't know how to feel, and it's all a bit awkward, and then you go, well there you go, there you have it. Because I don't think we necessarily always have quite open conversations around things like that, so I think it works. How she uses that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely. And I think if you like her comedy and like her humour as well, then I think it really helps. I think her humour is quite like widely appreciated. Like, I think her fans, comedy fans, are quite like a broad spectrum of people.
I mean, your brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Case in point.
yeah, exactly.
I think something I really liked about the book was like the way she talked about language. So I have a master's degree in linguistics, guys. I'm a language nerd. And I really liked the way she was talking about swearing. So actually, I've read a book on swearing. It's really interesting because she talks about she talks about it as like how She says, the more I understood swearing with detachment and as simply another component of language, and then she talks about how she learned about swearing at school and stuff. She said, I started reading Ivory and Welsh and knew from him that swearing could be used to illustrate anything from enthusiasm to emotion to dominance. It wasn't offensive, not really. Yet people's adherence to the social rules around swearing seemed a bit mad and appeared to focus disproportionately on women and being protected from it at all costs. I just find it quite interesting because, you know, like, I swear all the time. I'm like, fuck. And like, I feel like our generation is a bit like more open to swearing than like our parents. My mum would be like, Catherine, sorry, mum. But I just like the way throughout she talks about language. And she talks about it from the perspective of, like, she's autistic and she, like, struggles to understand social cues sometimes and, like, how people say something they don't really mean and things like that. And I just found, like, the perspective on language, like, really interesting throughout. And, like, I feel like you could almost write a whole book just on, like, the language elements and not, like, the rest of communication. Like, obviously, communication language, you have, like, the cues and stuff like that. But I just found it really interesting. I don't know if you also found it quite interesting.
Yeah, I do, because then on page 109, she talks about how it's used to, like, police women. So yeah. She talks about, she has this stint in a place called Westerly Way, which is, like, mental health facility. She goes there for, like, as you would go for school. So she'd go there for the day and then sort of go back home. And she says, if I understood all that as a kid, why couldn't the staff in the unit understand the need to let emotionally volatile people use emotive language when they needed to? Westerly Way was all speak your truth so long as it's comfortable and palatable to us. In her study on how women are permitted to express anger and emotion, Sarah Shemley notes that disapproval of swearing is based on social understandings of male power and female purity. When women curse, they tilt toward impure and in essence are tacitly assumed to deserve punishment. This explained the attitude of Westerly Way's staff, who seemed more concerned with chastising us for how we spoke than treating us as the patients we actually were.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then there's this whole, like, on the next page on 110, she tells the story of this, like, young woman that's in there with them, and she just doesn't speak, like, doesn't speak to anyone. She's of whatever. Then if she's, like,
we don't really understand
why she's there, but obviously she's, like, traumatised, doesn't speak. And then there's this one day where she does, right? And she says something that is policed by the people in there, and that makes her just recoil and she doesn't speak again. And you're just like, oh, you can feel the frustration by Fong Fern, and you can, and just sat there reading it. You're like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
I feel like I shared that frustration at that point. I was like, no.
Yeah. Because I think everyone tries, or, you know, does their best to get this young lady to come out of her shell, as it, you know, to be comfortable, to feel like she can speak. And then when she does find some sort of ground and some standing, they chastise her for it. And then it's like, I'm gonna see if I can find it. There we go.
You got it?
Oh, okay. Yes, I do. So she carries on from 109. I waited for Lorraine and other staff to stop tutting and droning on about what everyone had been up to before tuning back into the group. I caught the tail end of what Natalie was saying, and her voice had gone trembly. And that's why ever since that fucking bastard raped me, I just canny. Natalie, Lorraine said sharply. That's not how we speak here. I was stunned. Lorraine's admonishing about her and language policy while she was discussing the traumatic event that landed her there was something else. She tried to get Natalie to start again, but unsurprisingly, she clammed up for the millionth time. I wondered who exactly the unit was meant to serve. Sorry as well. That's like, just mentioned rape, just casually drops that in. But yeah, so the young girl's in there because she's been sexually...
So we do find out, actually. Yeah.
We do know.
But that's the only time it's mentioned.
And then she climbs up again. She's actually talking about what's traumatised her, and these staff are so, like, focused on policing them that she doesn't get to express herself. And I just, you could feel the frustration from Fern after that.
And it's a really good example of, like, how mental health institutions, like, weren't actually good for people with mental health. Like, even like 20 years ago, they, you know, I'm not saying we've, like, the NHS has nailed it now, given lack of funding and all that jazz. We'll get into that right now. But like, you know, those sort of like, almost what you, the stereotypical like mental institution, like a few, like back in the day, that wasn't really helping anyone. It was just like putting them in like a section of society away from everyone else. And like, I know this is like not that long ago, but like, that's essentially like, they were just like sort of keeping them away from the rest of society. They weren't actually helping them as such.
Very much.
They're not helping that girl talk about her trauma and stuff. And it's just, I just think it's quite interesting, that yeah. sort of like part of the book and that sort of example we get.
It very yeah. much feels like Fern's experience being there. And yeah. I think like when she talks about her childhood and growing up and being from like a strict Catholic family and her parents not really understanding how to, they don't understand her, and she struggles to understand their motivations and their decisions like mm-hmm. the decisions that they make around, they don't take the time to understand her and understand that all she wanted was a room yeah. to herself. So she's sitting down and study and she's trying to be good, but she had the view that they thought she was evil, and that's how she was meant to feel her whole entire childhood. So mm-hmm. like no one, so they just put her in this place and she just had to like be in this mental institution, like where they didn't take the time to understand. If the funny thing is, it wasn't until she sort of had a feeling that this was what the autism was, what she had, and it wasn't until she became an adult and then she was with that particular boyfriend who was like, actually you may be right, like let's look into this. If someone way down the line, just anywhere, had taken the time to really look, it could mm-hmm. have a completely different thing. I mean, she's lived a life and she's got lots of stories.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
I think that's part of like, it's so raw and honest, this book, but it's so eye-opening to like the issues with particularly women and being diagnosed with autism.
Yeah.
And like she says loads of things throughout the book about how like often like autism in girls, like young girls, presents itself in a really different way, and it's often just seen as like they're just studious and like they just care about school, when actually no, like that's like a sign that they might be autistic and things like that, but all the studies and stuff are all around like boys and how it presents itself in like boys generally. And then like she makes comments like, there's one thing about like the public perception of autistics is so heavily based on the stereotype of men who love trains. And I underlined that line, like marked it in the book. So I was like, that's so true. Like even today, when there's like so much work to like reduce these stereotypes, make sure that like we all like educate ourselves on like neurodiversity and things like that, like that's still like such a massive like perception of autism. And like, that's just, it's just so bad. Like, so books like this are really, really important for people to read and understand, like, you know, the different like ways that autism can present itself and way different people struggle with like being diagnosed and things like that.
And she talks about like online communities now being like the, you know, she goes, the NHS has still got some way to go, and be won't talk about that, as Kath said before, yeah. but it's like online communities, especially driven by women, where she talks about being openly autistic. It's not like a term that she particularly is a fan of, but it's because people are sharing their experiences that these diagnoses are happening. It's like, okay, yeah. right, so this is the things that we should be mindful of or should pay attention to. This is people's experience. And especially like there's so much research done around children and there's not very much happening around adults. And actually a lot of people are being diagnosed in later life.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I know it's not just a struggle for women, like struggle for men as well. But I just think it's interesting, like how she brings gender into it and talks about like the like specific added barriers for women. Yeah.
But then she has that bit as well towards the end, because when she talks about meltdowns, which she talks about meltdowns a lot, because that's one of her like symptoms, for lack of a better word. But it's just like, okay, here's a barrier if you're a woman. Here's a barrier if you are a woman of colour. Here's a barrier if you are a trans woman. Here's a here's a barrier if you are a man of colour. Like, then those added things make it even harder. And she literally lists, like, I remember that Elijah, the young man that was killed in America, because, you know, he was out openly skimming or something.
God.
So, like, or and there was a young woman in Sydney that she references as well, had no prior history of violence, just happened to have a meltdown, shot dead, something like that. So it's there's a lot of work to be done.
And I think it's really powerful the way she includes those examples, but also includes a lot of like studies and like a lot of like other references. So like if you are reading the book and you're like, oh my god, I really need to like look up more on this, like whatever, there's loads of like studies and different bits of literature and examples that you can go and research, which I think is really good. And it's like a very well researched book. Like, yes, it's her experience, but it's also like she brings into it like studies and like evidence, and I just think I really liked that. I thought that was really well done.
And it's really well done in the audio version as well. So, I mean, not everything is she going to say in, like, the cliff notes. So, because there's a lot of, like, notes in the footer here that explains, like, certain terms or, like, other studies. Obviously, she's not going to go to www.guardian.com, blah, 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 blah. But if there's, like, things that, like, concepts or terms or research that she can actually, like, expand on a little bit more, it's like nicely introduced into the book in a listening for the listening bit, so you don't miss that context at all.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's really like I like that, because I think memoirs are really good for audiobooks.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think like some of like, so she's obviously talking about her experience of like getting diagnosed with autism later in life, and but it is also her life story. So we like learn about her childhood, we learn about her going to university, we learn about like some like of her relationships, and also about like her experience as a stripper. And I just think like, I don't know, I just loved that whole like section of the book.
But, you know, when she was just like, you know, separate to like the what part of the wider discussion, separate to like what the main discussion, but it's just the way that everyone just used to just bounce around between the clubs. Like, I'd work at this club and then you get sick of it, something would happen, and you'd, it's like how people move around doing jobs, like in within an industry, and you're like, oh, I've had enough of where I am now, so you move to the next job in a different rival agency, and then you end up where you were back at the beginning again. It made me laugh when she was just talking about that.
God. Yeah. Stop it. You did not compare that to advertising agencies.
No, I mean, they're just like within an industry. It could be any industry. You don't have But it was just like, well, within the stripper industry of Edinburgh, there was like five clubs that you could work at, and she'd worked at all of them at least once.
Yeah.
And everyone knew everyone, and it really made me laugh. Doesn't matter where you go, it's the same shit.
And there's a bit where she talked about this guy that she had to bite her heels off. And she was like, I don't know why he was selling them to me when it was the only place I could buy them or something. I just find that really funny.
Oh, it was the detail that she gave about how he was like, well, this one helps you be really tall and like elongates your leg, but this one's really good for like hooking around the pot, or whatever the detail was that she gave there about the sales point of each shoe. I was just like, oh my God. I must, if I was her, I'd be sitting there going, this is my life. I can't believe I'm having this conversation. Just give me the shoe. Like, doesn't matter. It's all the same. It was quite funny. Like, those like little details, those like those little bits. Mm. And she was saying like he was like probably very stereotypical of like the type of person you think would own a strip club. But he was just like the sales guy, like buying, like the sales guy you had to buy your equipment from. And then actually her bosses were very like, they were atypical of who you think would own a strip club.
Yeah.
That particular club.
Yeah.
Then there was one boss that she didn't have that much FaceTime with because he was actually just like a dirty cretin and got ousted out for being a creep, a pervert. Can't remember what he did. I think he was like sexually inappropriate with the women. But the other guy, she was like, you wouldn't think he owned a strip club at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I like that. I thought that element was like just an, I just find it really interesting, frankly. Yeah. I know it's just her life and that's, she's just explaining her life, but I just, yeah. And you said that you really liked the stuff about the exercise, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. So this is like post-diagnosis and she's just like working through her routine. And like, we'll find it, because now she spent a year tracking her meltdowns, so we learn a lot about the different meltdowns and the different occasions that she has them. Obviously she's not going to explain every single meltdown she's ever had, but she spent a year tracking what they look like and what triggers them. And so for her, things like the movement of furniture isn't what triggers her meltdowns. It's like more of a change into her routine. So she's really tired, or she's done, like, you know how we could probably go out and work 6-7 days a week and still find a way to function, but that just sends her nervous system into absolute hyperarousal. Like, that's too much for her nervous system. And so then she realized that actually it's her nervous system that is probably triggering a lot of this when it's like in, yeah, when it's in the hyper state. So exercise for her goes both ways. I think she said that weed and cannabis and stuff goes for her both ways as well. It either like really amplifies any anxiety, or when it's in hyper, or it can calm her. So she says like CrossFit. So she really loves lifting and she finds lifting to be like great to help regular. She said she falls a lot, she trips a lot, she doesn't have she needs heaviness, like anything like a light touch makes her feel like on edge, but like heaviness helps her, and she trips and she falls a lot. So weightlifting is really good because it's made her strong and more grounded, and she falls and trips less. But then, so she's like, oh, I'll go to CrossFit, but actually a CrossFit environment is counter intuitive like to the environments that she needs, because she says, as much as I like to exercise and weightlift, communities or being in spaces where I have to make, you know, small talk or maintain fake conversations, she can't stand. She finds that really very hard to deal with. So then she was looking at, okay, well, if I can't be in a CrossFit community, then what other things can help my nervous system regulate, like help with my breathing? And then she said, actually, she went to yoga. And like, I know that stereotype of yoga. I also am a bit like, not a yoga girly really, or Pilates reformer. I like bar, but it does have that stereotype of women being in their like 90-pound yoga pants and all being a bit clicky and stuff. And she really was like, very much like, oh, I don't want to do that. But then she found the exercise itself, and if she looks at the more like holistic aspects of it and how she can use that to regulate her breathing and the connection and movement, has been really good for her, and that helped her manage her meltdowns a lot better. So it was really interesting, like her relationship with exercise, because as an exercise girly, like everyone's relationship with exercise is just different, isn't it? It is what you need it to be for what it is you're trying to achieve. And so,
but
yeah,
exercise is also important for everyone.
Like,
even though everyone's relationship with exercise is different, like I found last year, like I've really started to understand what I like to do with exercise rather than what I think I should be doing.
Yeah.
I liked that too.
Yeah, so Sue is the like therapist that helps her. It's on page 269. It's a really long paragraph. I don't really know where to start. But she says she took Sue's advice. I took Sue's advice and walked, rubbing my fingers and thumbs together as I did so, flapping my hands, no longer caring if anyone thought I looked weird. Stimming wasn't the gross thing I thought it was. And anyway, no one in London cares or looks at what anyone does. Sure enough, the meltdown subsided. I barely noticed until Connor texted me one day, "You've been really good lately. I'm proud of you." I also exercise regularly to prevent meltdowns, but found that even too much of that actually caused them. Lifting very heavy weights, for example, can cause overload in the central nervous system. of course, I thought to myself, I'd made the connection there, and then that everything in my thinking towards meltdowns had to be related to the nervous system and sensory system. Excited by my now experiment, I started mixing up my exercise routine. I'd always despised yoga classes with their competitive women and espousal of pseudo spiritual woo and Eastern spirituality, while the clientele wore £90 yoga pants. I scrapped the cynicism and started thinking of yoga as moving meditation and preventative treatment for meltdowns. This shift in my perspective helped, and the frequency and severity of the meltdowns reduced yet again. And then she talks about the CrossFit community. But yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And also, like, with yoga, it's like, I used to be a little like, but actually yoga helps me so much.
Mm.
Like, if I'm stressed and I do like half an hour of yoga, I'm literally a different person. So yeah, you have to just get past the whole perceptions of yoga, I think.
It's so funny, isn't it, that has that, like, where did that come from? And she does, I feel like Fern does this a lot in the book, like all of these like things, that these tropes, these like stereotypes of women in spaces, they come from somewhere, but where did they come from? Why are we living like this? And a lot of the time it's like, well, actually, then that, well, you know, when we talk about the diagnosis of autistic women and stuff like that, it almost like is a blocker to diagnosing women. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah, because like people, because like some of the ways it presents themselves, like, are just like some stereotypes of like women anyway, like, oh, girls like school, so, you know,
yeah,
just like things like that. It's just really, it's really interesting. And like, it's actually, I spoke to my mum about it, because my mum's a teacher and stuff, and we were talking about it, like, and she was like, yeah, it's like there was always more boys in schools that were autistic, but obviously that wasn't actually more boys that are autistic, but it was just more boys that were diagnosed with autism. So yeah, it's interesting. But I think the way that she talks about it in the book is like really helpful for a lot of people, either who are going through the process of diagnosis themselves. I can't speak for them, but hopefully it would be useful. But I think for people like us who perhaps need a bit more of a holistic view of like how people with autism like have to navigate the world and, you know, some of the challenges, and just makes us a little bit more aware, and a little, and then we can be a little bit more understanding. Like, I'd say we're like fairly understanding people, hopefully, but I think it's just really good for us to read something like this and like just get that extra sort of context, I suppose, and like a raw deep insight into like one person's story.
Yes, I think it's been very, very insightful for me, for sure. So I will forever be grateful for reading this, and just her life experience as well. Because her childhood wasn't like, I mean, traditional in the sense that she came from like two parents, and she had a brother and a sister and a family, and it, like, and Catholic and Scottish and whatever, but like, she didn't really have like a traditional in terms of its makeup, but maybe not in terms of how it played out, you know. It was very up and down. So
yeah, and her relationship with her family is like very, like, very open, as in the way she writes about it is like she doesn't leave anything left unsaid. Which is like really brave, I think, in a way, to like talk about your family like that. But I think it's so important to her story and her like diagnosis.
She has a really strained relationship with her mother, which she talks about. And I'm so glad that at the end they come to an understanding of each other. And I think her mum feels some guilt for maybe not realizing or doing the things. She says that her mum, you know, intuitively helped support my autism without knowing that's what it was. So when her dad was like, oh, you know, she's a really bright girl, she should do just physics and maths and whatever else it was. She was, her mum really encouraged like her language, like wanting to do like Arabic studies, and telling someone, she'd said that her daughter went to Edinburgh University to do Arabic studies, and the person was like, oh, you must be really proud. And her mum was like, oh, fuck off, you patronizing git, like, don't be patronizing. Like, so like, but it was always there. It's just because they, you know, like they couldn't read each other's love language, like miscommunication. Yeah. They weren't able to communicate for so long because of it. So
yeah, that's why communication is so important, right? And like therapy.
Yeah.
To like get to the bottom of that and like understand each other.
But even then they put her in these like therapists and stuff like that. They didn't take the time. I know. It's hard. It was difficult. It was difficult to hear how strained their relationship was. And it sounds like they're in a good place now. So that's good. I'm glad that that's the case for them, you know, because some people never get to that.
Me too. And I think, I think it's brilliant. So, yeah. So basically, guys, I think it's definitely worth a read or a listen. Either or.
Yeah, definitely. Go pick it up. You won't put it down, genuinely. You won't. Like, it's fairly Moorish.
Yes, and quite digestible. Like, yeah. So go pick it up in paperback or hardback or audiobook or ebook. Whichever your preferred medium.
All of them valid.
And let us know what you think. Yes. And they're all reading, guys. And let us know what you think, because like, we're really interested to know your thoughts. And like, if you have any like further recommendations or anything, please let us know. Our DMs are always open.
Yeah, or anything that you would like, anything that we missed or think we should be enlightened on as well. Like, I'm an open book, so like, talk to me. Tell me if I'm incorrect.
I
mentioned something wrong.
Yeah, and I almost feel like I almost want to revisit it in like 6 months' time, like, and to see how I'm feeling about it then. I like to like think about books at the time and then later on just be like, ooh, what has stayed with me from that book? Because I think quite a lot will stay with me from this one.
Oh yeah, I definitely feel like I feel like I've talked the hind legs off a donkey with people, and I've been like, oh, I'm reading this book and it's been really like, there's a lot to say, so I feel like I will be talking about it, or I will be drawing from points and statements and bits that she said, like, going forward for a very long time. So yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for listening, guys, and if you like us, please leave a rating, you know, 5 stars if you want to feel nice. And also make sure you follow like Octopus Books, Tandem Collection, Fern Brady on Instagram as well.
Thank you to them for sponsoring this podcast.
Oh my god, guys, and before we go, don't forget you can enter the competition to win a paperback. Head to our Instagram, it's our pinned post, like, comment and tag a bookish bestie, and follow us. And yeah, hopefully you win. But there's 2 books, so you've got 2 chances. And it closes 20th of Feb, so you have a bit of time to enter. And yeah, okay. Love you, bye.
Love you, bye. And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.